From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. And our board is gone, you can tell. No music. Maybe the snow has absorbed it all, but you have my sweet melodic voice to tell you that our connection this hour was made in two places late last year. And it's easy to get confused, so let's start with September. Here's the NPR headline from September. Quote, it's time to address the national teacher shortage. But in December, here's the headline from the Washington Post. Quote, the national teacher shortage is a myth. And we hear conflicting things all the time. We hear that recent graduates of local teaching programs are struggling to find work. There we are. Hi, Rob. Hi, everyone. We're going to have fun this hour. And you know what? Our guests, by the way, two of the three made it here, so I'll introduce them in a moment. We hear that recent graduates of local teaching programs are struggling to find work in this region. We also hear that there's a shortage of teachers, or at the very least, a sharp decline in the number of students entering teacher prep programs. Nazareth College was set to host the 2017 Careers in Education Conference this week, aimed at convincing college-bound students to consider a career in teaching, but the weather has forced them to cancel. We, however, are pushing ahead with our conversation on this subject, and I will welcome my guests for the hour. Dr. Jeff Crane is here, superintendent of West Irondequoit Central School District. Jeff, welcome back to the program.
Thank you.
Also in studio with us is Laura Streeter. You've got a great, by the way, voice, Jeff. You got to get a little closer to the mic for me there. You got a lot of notes.
I apologize for my voice. I lost it about 4 days ago during the windstorm.
Oh, sounds good to me. You're just fine there. And Laura Streeter's in studio with us. She's a history teacher at Penfield High School and a 2015 Nazareth College graduate. So welcome to you. We'll be talking
Thank
about
you.
Your work. Thanks for being here. On the line with us is Dr. Leslie Myers, superintendent of the Brockport Central School District. Dr. Myers, welcome back to the program.
Good afternoon.
Jeff, you were going to be the keynoter. So what's the story? What were you going to tell the audience?
Oh, I was really looking forward to that opportunity, Evan. I really want to impress, after 42 years in this business, I really wanted to impress upon those students, what a gratifying career, what an exciting career education can be, regardless of what type of educator these students might have gone into in this profession, what they can do to really make the world a better place through education.
Can they find jobs, though, Jeff?
Yes, they can. And I do believe there, if you look at the enrollment of students in education courses, especially in our local colleges, I think that the shortage is a real thing.
Dr. Myers, what message would you send to college-bound students who are thinking about this, but they're concerned? They hear that, well, you know, my peers are a little bit older, maybe they're having trouble finding work, or are there openings? What would you tell them?
Sure. I think first and foremost, there are openings, there is availability, and you do, there is the strong possibility of obtaining employment right out of college, because I think people get nervous about that. But the other thing is that we have to broaden our minds towards the different types of educational opportunities that are available for students. So I think too many times when we think about education, we think about solely teaching. But there are a variety of careers, counselors, social workers, occupational therapists, physical therapists, et cetera. So the field is pretty broad. And so I would tell them to just think about the variety of opportunities that are available.
We're going to talk to Laura about her experience in a moment, but let me follow up, Dr. Myers, because you said that, you know, students get nervous about the fact that, can I get hired right out of school?
Sure.
And this is from a 2015 article in Gannett's Hudson Valley and Albany area newspaper with the subheadline that read as follows, quote, an oversupply of teacher candidates makes New York State a tough job market for recent graduates. And here is the data they had. What percentage of students who graduated in 2013, that's the latest numbers they had, were employed by the fall of 2013? In other words, got a job out of school. New York State's state average with teaching certificates, 21%. Brockport graduates, College of Brockport graduates, 12%. SUNY Geneseo graduates, 10.7%. SUNY Buffalo graduates, 9.1%. I mean, that's a vast majority who are not getting jobs by the fall. Does that contradict the point you're trying to make, Dr. Myers?
Well, I think, one, it's hard for accurate data to be collected. I don't want to refute the data or say that it's inaccurate, but I think sometimes responding and collecting accurate data is difficult. And I'm making the assumption that data was collected as of a September 1 or closely after that start. We have opportunities that become available because of either retirements or other opportunities that become available in the fall or even in the spring. And so we hire just not solely for a September 1st start. I will say I did, and I have hired several individuals right out of college. But I think the other thing that we need to be mindful of is the fact that you have to be persistent. Not everybody does get a job right out of college. There are lots of substitute teaching opportunities where students who are trying to enter the career could work, if not every day, almost every day. And there are short or long-term opportunities. So it really, there are opportunities that are out there for students coming right out of college.
I know Jeff wants to agree, but let me read from both of these kind of the strange conflicting articles I mentioned, and then you can both follow up on that. So first, NPR had a story in September, and their headline was "Frustration, Burnout, Attrition. It's Time to Address the National Teacher Shortage." This is from the NPR story. Quote, "The good news is that there's an uptick in the hiring of new teachers since the pink slip frenzy in the wake of the Great Recession. The bad news is that the new hiring hasn't made up for the teacher shortfall. Attrition is high, and enrollment in teacher prep programs has fallen 35% over the past 5 years, a decrease of nearly 240,000 teachers in all. Parts of most every state in America face troubling teacher shortages. The most frequent shortages areas are math, science, bilingual education, and special education." End quote. Now, here's the Washington Post counter to that, and it's an opinion piece written by Kate Walsh, who's the president of the National Council on Teacher Quality. Their headline was, "The National Teacher Shortage is a myth. Here's what's really happening." And I'll quote from Kate's piece. Quote, "Nobody thought it important to consider that teacher prep programs had for years been graduating twice as many teachers as are needed. According to findings from the American Institutes for Research, over the past 30 years, programs graduated between 175,000 and 300,000 teachers each year, yet consistently school districts have hired only between 60,000 to 140,000 newly minted teachers. Instead, school districts have been far more likely to hire people who already have some teaching experience. Federal data from 1999 to 2012 shows that only about 30% of districts' new hires were straight out of a teacher prep program." End quote. So, two different stories. Jeff Crane, what do you make of those? What would you say about that?
Well, there is some accuracy to that. Evan, one of the things that we have seen and what the districts have done over the past few years, and I think Laura could attest to this, is that we have hired at the elementary level. There have been many, many graduates in the past with just elementary education degrees, but the schools have been hiring graduates with elementary ed and special education and degrees, dual certified. And we have been pushing for years that secondary education teachers also have special education backgrounds and coursework. And that's starting to happen as well. So I think there's some of the conflicting information that you're seeing is a result of that push, because the special educators have some of the best information and pedagogy around reaching all students, building relationships with students, flipping the classroom that the schools have been looking for now for the most recent past.
Okay, and Jeff, do you agree with the premise that in sort of the old days now, teacher prep programs simply had too many students in them? Supply and demand?
Yes, I would agree with that. In some point, especially when the schools were looking for the dual certifications.
Okay, Dr. Myers, what do you think?
I would agree with that, absolutely. And so we have been working very closely in Brockport with the college at Brockport to state those expectations that we have and what the job outlook looks like. We regularly visit classrooms and do workshops or have conversations with students to let them know that that has quickly become the expectation in most, if not all, school districts, at least locally.
And let me read one other part of Kate's piece. And again, this is from Kate Walsh, who's the president of the National Council on Teacher Quality. Continuing, quote, "What I find so frustrating about all of this is that we do actually have a huge, longstanding problem with teacher supply and demand. For 30 years, most districts in the nation have struggled to find enough certified secondary science and math teachers, and rural and urban districts have been unable to tap into a reliable and stable source of new teachers. One answer to the problem is to pay such teachers more than others, but most districts continue to reject that solution because it is untenable with unions. We could also ramp up the availability of part-time positions for science, technology, engineering, engineering and math, or STEM teachers, but again, few schools and states embrace this option because unions worry that districts will seek to replace full-time employees and their costly benefits with part-timers. Dr. Myers, what do you make of that?
Well, one of the things that I do agree with most of what you read in that quote, and again, we've tried to think outside the box and figure out how to appropriately deal with that. Again, with our partnership with the College of Brockport, we are sharing the expectations that we have, and we're working with them so the students who are currently enrolled in either undergraduate or graduate programs really understand what is needed to be a successful teacher or to obtain employment in the Brockport Central School District. So a few years ago, we were successful in obtaining an STLE grant, which is Strengthening Teacher and Leadership Effectiveness. And so components of that grant really allowed us to partner very intensively, with the college. And again, we did, and we have, and we will continue to hire students right out of college. That has been happening here.
Okay. Jeff Crane, what do you think of the follow-up part of what I just read?
Well, I agree with Leslie that the staff development piece of this is the most important piece. We have exceptional teachers on staff. We have a great relationship with a variety of colleges, but especially with Geneseo. We have taken the student teaching experience and extended it to a year-long experience, almost like the medical profession internship piece. And those students come to us highly prepared after that year-long experience to step right into the classroom. So we have taken that experience, extended it, and the hiring practices there have been very successful.
All right, listeners, we'd love to hear from you, and there should be some teachers listening with the day off today. A lot of most school districts are closed, right? Is there anybody open that you know? You guys
not
know?
I'm aware of.
Okay, so yeah, I'm looking outside. I can see Frontier Field, but barely, so it's some snow coming down. And if you want to join the program, we'd love to hear from you. Are you a teacher? How hard was it to find work? Are you someone who would looking to get into the field? Are you a parent of a prospective teacher? It's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. I think probably Leslie and Jeff would agree that it would be irresponsible to tell students, go into teaching, you know, there's a good chance you'll get work if it wasn't true. And I think what they've been trying to do is sort out some of the misunderstanding of the numbers to get an accurate picture. And that's what we're looking at here. And Laura Streeter is someone who got a job. She went to Nazareth College, graduated in 2015, and you were teaching in the fall?
Yes, I've been teaching for the last 2 years at Penfield High School.
You're a history teacher?
Yes, 11th grade U.S. history and 12th grade 12-1-1.
How's it going?
Great.
And,
love it.
And you know, you got a job that a lot of your peers would have loved to get, but we should point out it's part-time, right?
It is part-time. I was offered a part-time position the summer after I graduated college, and it ended up working out great for me because I'm going to grad school full-time. A lot of people leaving the teacher prep programs have to make that decision of applying for jobs or doing grad school for a year to get it done with and then entering with the hopes of finding a job easier.
Okay. How much conversation is there among your peers about, boy, can I find work by the fall? Will I get a job right out of school?
There's a lot of fear when you first leave college, and that's a lot of people making the quick decisions of grad school versus looking for a job. When I entered college in 2011, there was a lot of talk of no job opportunities, and we talked in our education classes about what your backup plan was. But the term we also used a lot was marketability. How can you make yourself most marketable to a school district? So at Nazareth College, we have the dual cert program. So I graduated with 712 social studies and 712 special ed. And now my master's program is educational technology specialist. So there's a whole different part of the education world I could take part in.
So when we look at the work that you're doing now as a history teacher part-time, mm-hmm. you know, I can't speak for Kate Walsh from the Institute who wrote in the Washington Post that I was quoting earlier, but I feel like she would say, yeah, look, you got a job. It was part-time. We have to do something a little bit better than that or be willing to do more part-time if the unions will allow it. I mean, do you feel that this is a great opportunity for you? Do you feel exploited in any way? I mean, how do you feel about the work that you're doing now?
It's been a great opportunity to have a job right out of college where I have taught everything from an AP level course to 12-1-1 within a 2-year span. I've taught almost every subject in social studies, and I've built a resume that I can take if I need to apply elsewhere for a full-time job. And meanwhile, still being able to get my master's within that 5-year span the state gives you.
Okay. Where did you grow up?
Dryden, New York.
Where is this?
Dryden. It's the town between Cortland and Ithaca.
Oh, Dryden. Okay. And so did you want to teach close to home for you? A lot of teachers will tell you they do if they can. Do you want to teach close to home?
I love Rochester. I
came to school here, would like to stay?
Came to school here, want to stay. I grew up right next to SUNY Cortland, which is a huge teacher prep program, and grew up with a lot of student teachers being around, and I knew if I stayed local, I would be possibly student teaching local, and I wanted to explore elsewhere.
Okay, and I think it's also fair to ask you, and to say, your story is your story. I mean, you can't tell students just do it like I did and you'll get the exact. I know you feel fortunate, and I know that you're trying to take advantage of this opportunity. But what's the short answer for how you got a job right out of school?
I worked my tail off in student teaching. I made really strong connections during my student observations, and I took my student teaching opportunities very seriously. I student taught at Penfield High School, which ended up landing me the job, and I student taught at East High School. So two very different situations, great experience at both, and I took advantage of every opportunity to network and get to know the local districts.
Do you have confidence that you will have a full-time job in teaching soon?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. I wonder who's listening. This is somebody who's probably going to be in demand, whether it's in Penfield or elsewhere. Jeff Crane, what can we learn from her story? What do you think?
Well, I'd just like to tell Tom Putnam that I'm already recruiting her.
I was thinking the same thing.
I was here first, Leslie.
Is there wisdom to draw from this story, Jeff?
Oh, absolutely. Laura talked about marketability. Listen to her story. Look at what she did to build not only her resume, but the skills that she would take into a classroom. It's not just about GPA, is it, Laura?
Definitely
it's,
not.
That's important. Absolutely, that's important. It's about leadership in the classroom. It's about building relationships with our kids. It's about caring and mutual respect. That's what I would have talked about tomorrow with those students thinking about teaching and thinking about education and all of those different opportunities to work with our future.
All right, before I go to the phones, Dr. Myers, do you want to weigh in on that too?
I do. She said a couple of things that really rang true for me. She said, I worked my tail off in student teaching. You want to take advantage of the fact that even though you are not being officially observed as a teacher or an educator would, you are being observed. And so we're looking at folks who are dedicated, who are working very diligently. And so she made an impression on the staff at Penfield High School. I think the other thing that she said was even though she grew up in Dryden, and Laura, I used to work in Ithaca, so I'm very familiar with Dryden, is that she knew that, you know, she loves Rochester and that she might need to move. We can't get entrenched in the fact that if we grew up in a particular part of the state that we're going to stay there, you may have to move, you know, an hour or more away from where you were currently located, and that has to be something that you absolutely take into consideration.
Let me also read an email from a listener about those numbers. Carrie in Panyan says, Evan, I'm wondering if those numbers you quoted about the number of teaching graduates getting employment by the fall are a bit misleading. For instance, does that take into account students that automatically enter a master's program, i.e., were not seeking employment? And also how those numbers compare to other fields of study? How many graduates actually get a job in their field right out of school? All of which means choosing teaching isn't necessarily a worse choice than any other major. That's from Carrie, and that's fair. I think it's fair to point out that college graduates in any field, how many are working full-time in the field they want within 3 months.
Sure.
I don't know the answer to that, and I'm sure it varies widely, but I guess the point is, if it's 21% of teachers in this state, that seems low. How does it compare? More context is probably needed. Jeff and Leslie, I would say if it's 21% in 3 years or 5 years, then we should worry, right?
I think
would you agree with that?
Yes.
Sure.
Yeah? Okay. So, Carrie, thank you for that. That's good context. And let's get to the phones. Andrew in Rochester first up. Go ahead, Andrew.
Yeah, hi, Evan. Thank you so much, and thanks to the panel for your time
today.
I just wanted to ask a question about the panelists' view of sort of larger market and job market and political forces that may impact how prospective teachers come into the profession, what makes them want to stay, and so on and so forth. So, for example, you know, we talk about the numbers of new prospective teachers going into teacher education programs in the SUNY system or the private system. But we're also missing from that conversation are people who choose to go into alternative education programs like TFA, Teach for America, and also sort of the general tone that's been set about what it means to be a teacher in this country and how, you know, it's often demonized, and also sort of the climate of assessment and standardization mm-hmm. that impacts whether or not teachers choose to become a teacher or to stay in the profession. So I think... and. I could also add to that the fact that with looking at the state legislature and the recent budget, you know, the legislature opted not to continue the foundation aid funding. So how does that impact schools' decisions about how, you know, who to hire and, you know, so on and so forth?
Andrew,
so,
good stuff. I have a quick question for you.
Yeah, but I just want to focus on the bigger market forces. Mm-hmm.
No, Andrew, I have a quick question for you.
Yeah.
This is good stuff. Are you available to host when I'm off?
Oh,
no, I don't know. I don't know. When are you off?
Really good stuff. A good wide range of points that Andrew's making there. Leslie, you want to start? Take it wherever you want, because he gave you a lot of good stuff to work with there.
Sure, a couple things. Andrew, thanks for that, those questions and those points, because all very poignant and important. First of all, I think it's important to go into teacher preparation programs and talk to students about frontline information. So, for example, every semester, I go into the college at Brockport, and I talk to students about what exactly is APPR, what does it mean, what are the implications, and I start by having them kind of do what I call a brain dump, and I ask them to kind of text, and it shows on the screen. Tell me, what are the first three things that come to mind
when you hear APPR, and almost always it's pretty negative, scary, you could get fired, etc., very negative words. And so we take that and I kind of unpack it with them and say, okay, well, here's what APPR is, here's where it shows up in the law, here's how it plays out every day in Brockport Central or in most school districts. I show them our actual agreement so they can understand, here's how it actually works, here's how you can be very, very prepared for an observation. So I think it's so important to really start with students who are just entering or endeavoring to enter into the field. So that's one thing that it addresses. The other thing is when you talk about just current teachers and morale and how teachers have been portrayed, you know, in the political realm, I meet with all of my first-year teachers in particular and thank them for the job that they're doing. I ask them, what are they enjoying about teaching? What are some things that are frustrating to them? And how can I support them as the superintendent? And are more resources or is any more support needed? And I started that especially when we were really getting hit hard by the governor, you know, relative to Common Core and some other things like that. And just to let teachers know and staff know that they are incredibly valuable, because it has been very difficult, and it feels like there has been an attack in particular against teachers. So it's a little bit of a difficult environment, and I can see where young people who may already be in teacher preparation programs may be thinking about switching to something else, or they're too far in and they're thinking, oh my goodness, what am I going to do now? So I feel as certainly as a superintendent, as an educator, not as long as Jeff, but for a while, to really share with and educate up-and-coming leaders and educators and ones who we already have in our districts.
Okay. Jeff?
Well, Leslie knows exactly where I'm going to go with this. I have been deeply troubled for now 4 years with the fact that our governor, in an effort to move his agenda, has used our teachers to blame society's ills on our teachers and to use our teachers for accountability factors with this APPR system, that most of our school districts, out of 700 districts, many of our districts, most of our districts did not need this rubric, this accountability piece. And we have been saddled with this APPR system for now 4 years. We have spent untold hours and unbelievable money on this mandate. And I believe teachers and the entire profession has been hurt. I believe good, hardworking teachers have been looking over their shoulders because of this. And it's been incumbent upon me as a superintendent. Leslie mentioned this. I know many superintendents have had to make sure that the teachers in their districts knew that the superintendents had their back, that this system was not going to be used in a way to hold teachers accountable for society's ills, that in great respect, legislators and politicians had ignored the issues that they could help solve, that teachers can't solve, that teachers cannot be held accountable for. Teachers can be held accountable for the education in the classroom.
And you think they are?
And they are in almost every instance. Do we have problems in public education? Absolutely. Do we have situations where monies are not available to have teachers held accountable in certain situations? Absolutely. But in most instances in public education, you will find hardworking teachers, hardworking administrators doing the best possible job for students and moving students along appropriately. And this mandate has been something that has hurt the morale of public educators across the state needlessly. And we are now starting to come out of it slowly but surely. I think our commissioner now has been doing some great things and is working hard to help those great educators get back to a place where we can have educators educating again without looking over their shoulders with this rubric that is inappropriate.
Laura Streeter was someone who was in college at the height of Governor Cuomo's comments about holding teachers accountable, the need to be able to fire bad teachers, in the governor's words, and how much he kind of put that weight on that part of the argument. Did that bother you? Were you aware of it? Did that impact any of your peers who were in the program?
Even before I started college, that was the conversation. And I had a lot of teachers when I was in high school who found out I was pursuing education and discouraged that choice.
Oh, really?
Just out of their own frustrations of what they're experiencing. And thankfully, I have a mother who's a teacher who saw it as the perfect fit for me, who encouraged me. But when you're in the program, it definitely was discouraging at times and frustrating just to know that you're going through all this training and that you already know you're going into a career with a lower salary than what your peers are going to graduate with. And you're going into a career where you might not get as much credit for your work. But one thing I always tried to do was twist it, that I'm coming out of college with the newest training. I was the second class to have to go through the EdTPA test, where you are filmed and have to turn it into the state. And I tried my best to look at APPR and other requirements as, okay, I've done something like this before. I'm just going to do the best I can and try to keep in mind that I'm a new teacher still learning the craft.
All right. Well, if you're on the phone, we're going to get our only break of the hour. We're going to come back, take your phone calls. I got a great question from Maria, which we'll get to later this hour. She says, my daughter will be a junior in high school next year. She's interested in education as a career or perhaps school counseling. As we start the college search process, what should we be looking for in a strong college program that will make her most marketable upon graduation? Our guest will answer your question, Maria. We'll get to your phone calls as well. We're talking to Laura Streeter, a history teacher at Penfield High School, Dr. Jeff Crane, superintendent at the West Irondequoit Central School District, Dr. Leslie Myers, superintendent of the Brockport Central School District, district. And our conversation was sparked by Nazareth College's, well, they were hosting the 2017 Careers in Education Conference that was set for tomorrow. It's had to be canceled because of the weather, but our guests are still here, and we'll get back to your calls after this break. Coming up in our second hour, the very latest in heart care, and we're talking about heart disease and challenges at all ages. Sometimes we assume that heart problems come later in life, but we'll talk about kids. We'll talk about surprising diagnoses for people in their 30s and 40s, what you should know, how to recognize signs, and more. It's all next hour.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from Ralph Honda, offering the full line of Civics, including the 2017 five-door Civic hatchback, located on Ridge Road West with dealerships in Rochester since 1933. Ralph Honda, Honda done right, ralphhonda.com. And Episcopal Senior Life Communities at Valley Manor, offering custom apartment homes for independent seniors seeking an active lifestyle. Located on East Avenue in the Arts and Cultural District. For more information, call 442-6450.
In 2007, Al Gore wrote a best-selling critique of what he saw as the Bush administration's attack on truth. He's updated it for the Trump era.
American democracy is in grave danger from the changes in the environment in which ideas either live and spread or wither and die.
Our conversation with Al Gore this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and let me get back to your phone calls. Paul in Brighton has been waiting to join the program. Go ahead, Paul.
Yes, hi, good afternoon. So I realize the theme of this program is teaching profession and how to give incentives for young teachers to get into the profession, stay in the profession. And that's all definitely things that should be done. And as someone who lives in Brighton, I have to say that I've been very satisfied with the education that my children have received in the Brighton system. But more generally, most listeners, of course, are essentially consumers of education, either personally or for their children. And there are many areas in the country which, despite the immense resources, just in terms of money alone, that are given to them, that the results are so poor. And, of course, we all are familiar with Rochester itself, which, by my estimation, the average class in a Rochester district and probably throughout New York State, very roughly, we're spending about $500,000 for every 25 students, which I think is the class size in most schools. And for that amount of money, we're getting such poor results. You know, barely 50% of the students graduate. The literacy rates are rather low.
You blame teaching, or you blame the money, Paul? I mean,
it's part of it. The point is, we are spending a lot of money on education, and we're getting poor results. And definitely, a large part of the blame falls outside of the schools,
poverty.
It may not be poverty, whatever it is.
Oh, it's poverty. Poverty is a big part of it,
It's certainly a big part of it, but there may be other parts of it, too. It may be our attitude toward education. I'm speaking now outside of the teaching profession. But whatever the cause is, we're not getting the results. We could probably double the amount of money we're spending on these schools, and the results would not improve substantially. So there's some other answer.
Okay, well, I mean, you have any ideas on what it is, Paul? I mean, for me, the best thing you can do to improve schools is to reduce poverty. But what do you think, Paul?
Reducing poverty is one solution. And perhaps it's a very provide services to these communities in a very concentrated way to hold them accountable for first getting the kids to school, because the truancy rates, as you know, are very high, too. If they're not in school, they're not going to learn anything. And provide some service to get the kids to help them do their homework and things like that. It's outside of the classroom is what I'm trying to say. It's not in the classroom.
All right. Paul, thanks for the phone call. I mean, if I'm walking across the tightrope and you're going to give me help balancing and encouragement, and you're going to make sure it's a tight, real, solid rope and a wire and even maybe as wide as it can be, that's one thing. It's another if you ask me to do it drunk and you're shaking the wire, and I feel like that's poverty. But, I mean, Paul may have a different idea. I mean, Dr. Crane, Jeff, what do you think? What do you think, Jeff?
Evan, you, Paul touches on some great concepts. I mean, if we were able to concentrate on making sure that from birth to 5 years old, our kids were totally prepared to enter the school system and healthy. And I think many of the problems of the urban setting, especially, would be taken care of. We have to, as a society, commit to that, to our kids from birth to 5 years old.
Simple as that.
Well,
than we are now.
More than we are now. We are not serving our kids at that level. When you compare our school districts, our schools in America to other countries, you will see the greatest difference comes in what is done for kids at that age level prior to school-aged kids entering our schools.
All right, Leslie Myers, what do you think?
What I'm most concerned about, or what I see, is the trauma that our children, whether they're very young up or as they move through middle to high school. I know at least in Brockport, we are experiencing, or we're seeing children who have experienced some things that we as adults have not even experienced. And so we're working on helping to remove the barriers that prevent students from not being successful. Some of it, certainly, a lot of it is, is poverty. But we have kids that are going through things that school is the furthest thing from their minds. And so we're really working on trauma-informed care.
All right, let me get to Maria's question and let the panelists attack this, because this falls right in line with this question on that was part of what was going to be addressed in the 2017 Careers in Education Conference that was scheduled for tomorrow at Nazareth, which has been canceled because of the weather. Maria writes, my daughter will be a junior in high school next year. She's interested in education as a career or perhaps school counseling. As we start the college search process, what should we be looking for in a strong college program that will make her most marketable upon graduation? I think all of our panelists can weigh in, and I'll start with Leslie Myers. Go ahead, Leslie.
Sure. I think first and foremost, Maria, you want to look for your daughter a school that has a strong program, and especially both teaching and counseling, because she hasn't made up her mind in which direction that she's going in as of yet. You also want to take a look at what is the placement rate. You know, we've been talking about that a little bit, trying to find out what that is like, what types of partnerships does the college or university have with local or regional school districts. I think certainly having conversations with the dean of education and with actual professors, or even trying to find out whom has graduated from the program. There's alumni that usually are available to speak with up-and-coming students who potentially could be entering. But you just want a good, solid preparation program. And again, as Laura mentioned, then once your daughter gets admitted, then you want to make sure that she's working hard, and that once she gets to that student teaching or that internship, if she goes the school counseling route, that she really is giving it her all and is making herself as marketable as she can. Because there's only so much that the college or university can do. As the applicant, you know, and all of us now being educators and working in the field, there was that certain je ne sais quoi that I think we brought to the table that our employer saw that made us marketable. And you want to make sure that you build that up and you are able to present your best foot forward when eventually applying for a job.
All right, Superintendent Crane?
I would have my daughter go right to her school counselor, her school social worker, her school psychologist, and sit down and talk about their profession and start to focus in on some of the things that might interest her and help her focus on the colleges where those professionals went, and that will help her focus on exactly what she might want to do.
All right, Laura Streeter, again, who's a history teacher at Penfield and a 2015 college graduate. Go ahead.
I would agree with what everyone said. Definitely look at a program where there's opportunities for both paths if she hasn't decided yet. And I would just stress again, if she chooses education, that dual certification is amazing, not just for marketability, but for your skills as a teacher. You really gain the abilities to teach anyone in your classroom, and you gain skills that you are stressed maybe more in a dual cert program than just a general education cert, because you learn the differentiation and all of these skills that are really important to districts today. And I would also just, when you tour the campus, talk to the as many professors as you can. Something that was important to me was I wanted a name to be known at the school that I went to. I didn't just want to be one of a couple hundred teacher candidates. I wanted to be someone where when they were placing me for student teaching or observations, it was taken into consideration what type of a teacher I was and made sure I had a good fit.
Here's an email from a listener named CJ who says, I'm sorry, yes, CJ. He says, our daughter is one of the last Cornell graduates with her master's in education. Cornell no longer offers it. While in college, she was told, but you are so smart. Why not become a lawyer, go into business, medical school? She finds that attitude so insulting and demeaning. She studied biology and human sexuality and is certified in science, math, and health. She now teaches abroad, where teachers are revered. Is there any hope that we can get her back to this hemisphere? Teachers are professionals with advanced degrees. Why do we treat them as if any idiot could do their job, which we view as part-time with summers free? That's from CJ. That's not your brother, is it, Jeff? I mean, that's not... you could have written that email, but... I just teed that one up for you. This is a softball for Jeff Crane.
You're just going to get me going again, don't you?
I mean, do you understand his frustration?
Though? Absolutely. CJ, send me the resume, number one. Number two... Why do we treat our educators that way? And when you compare the way America treats its educators to the other countries that have such great results, you will see that we fall way short of treating our professionals in a way that is respectful. From everything from the monetary point of view to the respect that they should earn as professionals in the classroom. I don't understand it. I hope that we can change it, and I hope it starts with your child.
Leslie Myers, what do you think?
Sure. I get asked this question, you know, out and about in social settings or other places, and I just simply respond. Being an educator gives me why I went into the field, because I felt incredible joy in seeing and making, even if it was just a small, tangible difference in the lives of my students. You know, we're attracted to teaching or education because we have a sense of service, because we want to make clear and tangible differences in the lives of children. And it's interesting because my class reunion is coming up. It's a year that I won't mention over the air. But my classmates, it was interesting, know that I'm a superintendent, that I'm an educator. And they said, you know what, Leslie, we saw that in you. We knew that you were going into education. I was originally intending to go to medical school. I had not planned to go into education. But several of my classmates chimed up and said, we knew you were going to go into education. I said, can you tell me, how did you know that at 16, 17, 18 when we were in high school? And it's because they would say, you know, you were just kind, you were caring, and, you know, I would go and volunteer and work with elementary, and at that time we had a junior high in my district. And so you really have to be passionate and dedicated to the field, and just think about it. If you don't have educators, how do we get to the next step of being doctors or lawyers? You need to have folks mm-hmm. who are willing to support and teach and encourage our young people.
And Wilma in Rochester on the phone is next. Go ahead, Wilma.
Hi, thank you for taking my call,
sure.
Evan, and I just want to start out by saying that you've got two of my favorite superintendents on today, and I hope that everyone in Rochester and Brockport and Irondequoit really appreciate the jewels that they have. Here's my comment and question. I believe that there is a teacher shortage, but that the teacher shortage is focused on Latinos, African Americans, and Asian teachers and males across the spectrum. What I keep hearing about Rochester City School District is that there is the school district is top heavy with white women teachers. So given that the population in the school district is so diverse, what's Nazareth doing in its recruitment of students into the teaching field, and what are the superintendents doing to try to encourage their students from diverse populations to go into teaching? And I'm not looking at it just as important for the city school district, but it's also important as we move to 2045 for our suburban and rural students also to have a diverse teaching staff.
Well, Wilma, absolutely. Thanks for the phone call. It's right up the alley. You might have seen Megan Mack and I put together a year-long report that culminated in a five-part series this past December, which you can still find on WXXINews.org, called Degrees of Diversity, that attacked this issue from a number of angles. And we had a live panel discussion in which Jeff Crane and Leslie Myers were part of that. And so I think I'll start with you, Jeff. We'll ask both of you. I can't ask Nazareth. They're not here to represent themselves. But when it comes to what is being done above and beyond, you know, job notices and everything else that you would do, you know, or is there anything above and beyond to attract and recruit teachers of color?
Yes, thank you, Evan. And hi, Wilma. Thank you so much for your nice comments. Much appreciated. And just so you know, there are some school districts, as you know, in the past few years have been involved in a Grow Your Own program, the Today's Students, Tomorrow's Teachers program. But we're going to reach out and on May 8th, coming up in May, we are going to bring Dr. Margarita Bianco, who is the founder of the Pathways to Teaching program out of Denver, to our area to talk about this program that she has run now for many years and has been very successful in the Denver program of growing students going into dual enrollment programs. And we have Monroe Community College and Nazareth College are first in line to be very excited about being a part of this program, where 11th and 12th graders become enrolled in these programs, start to explore their abilities as teachers, get credits, and get into the program with MCC and Nazareth, and hopefully start to help diversify our teaching ranks. So, Wilma, we are working on it, and we hope that many districts join us in that effort.
Before I turn to Dr. Myers for her answer on that, I can tell our listeners that after our series of reporting, we reached back out to districts locally to ask them, you know, any additional emphasis, any plans to do more on this issue. And a lot of districts essentially just said no, which was kind of surprising to us. Jeff Crane was one of the first to reach out specifically to say, absolutely yes, and give us these kind of details that it's a priority in West Irondequoit. Leslie Myers, how about you and your district?
Sure. And Wilma, thank you for your nice comments as well. I think I was just recently at a meeting a couple months ago with Dr. Ann Kress from MCC, and she said something that really hit me. She said, we tell our students, you can't be it if you don't see it. And I thought that was so powerful. So first and foremost, I think just my sheer visibility in classrooms all the way from pre-K all the way up through graduation in my district, students see that they have an individual, a female of color, at the helm or in a leadership position in the district. And so I do get questions from students. What does it mean to be the superintendent? And I've been called everything from a super flight attendant to a Super Nintendo by my younger students, which I think is awesome. But just I think students seeing me in this role, either in my district or when I'm out and about in other places, I think is very powerful. The second thing is I'm a Urban League Black Scholar, and so I have regularly dedicated and volunteered my time with that organization, and they're dedicated to working with students of African descent. And whenever I'm leading a workshop, if I'm doing a keynote or just interacting with students, I'm constantly encouraging them, think about a profession in teaching. And we talk about the wide variety of opportunities that are available. And so I try to do my work through working with, you know, my students, and talking about the value of being an educator and how important and impactful it is. And so, you know, it's so encouraging to me now, having started in the Rochester City School District, I now have former students who are counselors, who are teachers. I even have two students, former students that I know of, who are principals, and I have one who is studying to be an assistant superintendent. And so I think just that role model and that example and just me just daily just kind of living my life is ways that I try to attract diverse populations of young people into the profession.
All right, I'm going to finish with a yes or no question for Jeff Crane. We tried to get in as much as we could. Dave on Twitter said, school districts have built in 3% a year increases on labor costs. The result of a sub 2% structural tax cap is to strangle the districts unless they reduce scheduled raises. Yes or no, Jeff? Is that a fair way to view that?
No, that's not a fair way to
that's not accurate?
No, that's not accurate.
Should we talk tax cap on a different day?
I will come back and talk with you about that.
Yes. Okay. You might have some things to say. Superintendents often have things to say. Jeff Crane is the superintendent of the West Irondequoit Central School District, and it's always our pleasure. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, Evan.
Dr. Leslie Myers, superintendent of the Brockport Central School District. Thanks for making the time, Dr. Myers.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Laura Streeter teaches history part-time at Penfield High School. Someone's going to employ her full-time soon, and you can see why students are excited to have her in class. We're excited to have you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Short break. More connections next.